What's up, guys? Welcome back to Worth the Wait podcast. I am your host, Cookie Miller, and I am so excited because today we are talking all things mental health. You guys know I have been wanting to bring you some information like this, but that's not really my lane. So I wanted to make sure we had an incredible guest to bring in who could really give us all the insight on what we need to know about mental health, how we can improve our mental health, and especially talk about mental health in the Black community. So I thought there would be no better person than Dr. Ebony Butler, who I'm honestly just so in awe and so happy that she accepted this invitation for little old me. So welcome to the show, Dr. Butler. Why don't you tell us or tell the audience about you? I know about you, but tell them about you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. I don't think this is a little old you. I think you're doing good work, and I'm happy to go in spaces where I feel like the work aligns and I feel like the audience and community will benefit. So thank you for having me. I'm Dr. Ebony, y'all, and I'm a licensed psychologist here in Texas. I'm also a food relationship strategist and creator of My Therapy Cards. A lot of my work centers around helping Black women heal from trauma, be that interpersonal trauma or race-based trauma, trauma in the workplace, a lot of corporate stuff, and helping us find our voice again, become empowered, learn how to trust ourselves, learn how to ask for what we want and need, show up in relationships with boundaries and effective communication. So all of that is trauma recovery, and people don't understand how it is trauma recovery. And it is, because a lot of times trauma takes all of that stuff away from us. And it really does make us feel inferior. And it helps us, you know, it makes us show up in spaces where we really feel like we have to minimize ourselves. So I work with Black women, other women of color to help us take up space and find our voices again. And so a lot of my work, from every hat that I wear, is centered around empowerment.
Oh, I got goosebumps. Listen, if you are watching the visual episode, I would not lie to you. I got the goosebumps and everything, because I'm like, yes. You know, someone who's really going to talk to all of these things that we go through, especially as Black women, and especially living in the U.S., what we go through. So I'm just very happy for you to be here. Kind of going along the lines of what you were talking about, I really want you to address how societal and historical and even our cultural background can impact how we may feel as women of color in terms of our self-worth and how it may affect our pursuit of personal goals.
Oh yeah, this is a good one, and I'm gonna see if I can't make it succinct, right? Okay. So a large part of the work that I do stems from my graduate school work. So my dissertation was around sexual stereotypes in hip hop and how Black women negotiate their sexual experiences based on those scripts that they've internalized. And so I spent a lot of time learning about scripts just in general of Black women. And in this country, Black women and abroad, Black women have been stereotyped using a number of scripts, with the four basic ones being the mommy, the mammy, the matriarch, the sapphire, the Jezebel. So from those four stereotypes, Black women, and those are all negative stereotypes, like how we were depicted in film and media and print, and just how people thought about us in general. So from those stereotypes, a lot of different stereotypes form. And if we were to come present day, you know, we have the diva, the boss chick, the influencer. We have so many different stereotypes. All these are just tropes that exist in society to depict how Black women are. And we have some media outlets, things that will exploit the Black woman, and a lot of just different ways that Black women are looked at in very negative lights. So if we back up a little bit and go back in history, the strong Black woman trope was created so that Black women would rebel against the negative stereotypes. It was like, no, we're none of those. We're strong. We're none of those. We can do all the things. And that worked during a time where we needed it to work, and where a lot of Black males were going away or being imprisoned, and a lot of things were happening to the Black family. The Black woman really had to step up. And so that actually empowered Black women at that time. The thing that has happened over history, though, is we haven't let it go, and it's been passed down. And so when you think about the ways that we show up in society and the things that impact our mental health, a lot of them have to do with the scripts that we have also internalized and the ways that we see ourselves and the things that we're fighting against for how people see us. So you have a lot of anxiety, you have a lot of irritability, trying to rebel against this image that we're angry or we can't show emotion, trying to really let go of being strong women or strong Black women and trying to be soft, but also not having space to do that because of how history has created, you know, sort of desperate conditions for us as people of color, and where we have to live in survival mode due to a lot of other systemic issues. So we're constantly battling a number of things day to day. We're battling what people think about us, what we think about ourselves. We're battling anxiety. We're battling depression. We're battling trying to succeed. We're also understanding where we come from, trying to get out of survival mode, trying to let go of some of those coping skills that we developed as a result of trauma. So when you talk about what impacts our mental health, all of those things, and the way that we work around it is to actually try to be more aware of what's at play for you. One of the things that I tell clients all the time when they tell me that they had some difficult happen or maybe showed up in a way that they didn't like or weren't proud of, I always ask them, what version of you was that showed up? Mm. Who was that? How old were you? Because it could be your 12-year-old self showing up to that disagreement. And why did your 12-year-old self feel like they needed to show up? So anytime we're irritable, anytime we're upset, depressed, anxious, feeling like we just can't get it together, judging ourselves, comparing ourselves to others, one thing I really want people to ask themselves is, what version of me is that? What earliest memory do I have of when I felt like that? Because that's going to give you some data around what you may be triggered around or what may be coming up for you. The other thing that I would kind of tell people how to cope with all this stuff that we're battling, you can't fight every battle every day, but try to fight the ones that's keeping you from being your highest self. So I can't fight the battle of racism every day, but I can fight the battle of my own negative judgments every day. I can't fight the battle of poverty every day, but I can also make sure that I'm working in therapy to name systemic issues that are going on for folks that's leading to mental health symptoms, that kind of thing. So these are some of the things that I would just encourage people to try to pay attention to and to become more aware of.
Ooh, okay.
I know that was a lot.
It was a lot. And I'm like, hold on. First of all, I feel like I should have been taking notes. I was like, I started to take notes and I was like, is that going to pick up on the mic? And is it going to be distracting? But I was like, I need notes. I want to go back to the very first thing you said when you talked about those four categories. Now, I think I've heard of three of those and I understand mm-hmm. what those are. But one that you said, I think, was Sapphire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sapphire. What is that?
That's the angry Black woman. That's the sassy woman. That's the fiery woman, right? So if you can't be nurturing, then you got to be angry. If you can't be angry, then you got to be too sexy, right? You can't just be as a Black woman. So if you think about, I age myself, but it comes around Sanford and Son.
I love Sanford and
Son. The older Black woman who was on there, she's Sapphire.
Yes.
She's Sapphire. If we think about Martin, Pam is Sapphire.
Gotcha.
So feisty, fiery, that kind of thing. So a woman who really doesn't allow people to walk over them, but also really presents herself more angry than anything.
Gotcha. Okay. So you're saying that some of the anxiety that we may develop as women of color from being placed into these scripts, right? That is the thing that we need to work on. How do we do that? How do we work on?
First of all, you have to be aware that that's happening. So we don't know consciously. So just like when I did my dissertation, when we looked at the sexual scripts in hip hop, right? We don't know that we are internalizing these things. The people who taught us don't know that they are teaching these things because they've internalized. And I'll show you the way that it shows up without knowing. If you were raised by a mother or grandmother who was like, make sure you're always polite, make sure you are always smiling, make sure you don't give people a hard time. Make sure you don't make waves.
Mm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Make sure you don't give people a reason to leave you. Make sure you don't give people a reason to fire you. So be nurturing. And then I'm from Mississippi, so we heard this a lot. If you don't feed your man, somebody else will. Don't ever let your man leave the house hungry. Nurture him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they've internalized a lot of this as well. And that's typically out of survival, we've had to be these things. But historically, these things have not worked for us to give us a great depiction of our power, who we are as people in a positive light, they've all been very negative, and we've been depicted in very negative lights and not given opportunities because of the ways that we have been depicted in ways that we show up. So a lot of these other things too, the Jezebel, don't wear short shorts, don't wear short dresses, don't, call in names, or you're a slut, or you're a hoe if you sleep around, or things like that, or you can't have sex. So all of these things that we don't came out as messages like that can be tied back to these scripts that exist in history for Black women.
Gotcha. So it was funny because something that you said, you were talking about nurturing for the husband, and if you don't mm-hmm. make dinner, I kid you not, I was on a call earlier with one of my clients, and actually I was doing her check-in response, and she said, I think it's just a culture thing that I feel like I need to prepare dinner for my husband, because we were talking about, maybe you need to get a meal prep service for this season, right? Because it's going to free you of the thought and trying to figure things out, and you have a lot going on. And she's like, maybe I should do that. But what's in the back of her mind is, how am I going to make dinner for my husband? How am I going to do all these things? And she said something that I thought was so profound, and it was so nice for her to have that aha moment of, well, I can understand why this existed culturally. And she was like, but I'm not my grandmother or my mother, right? So we're living in a totally different time.
That's right. But that guilt is still there. So when you talk about right. mental health symptoms, right, that are associated with these things, that guilt is still there. That shame is still there. Running yourself into the ground and saying yes to everything is still there. So a lot of the anxiety that we feel, I have to get it done. I didn't get to my to-do list. I didn't do the thing that I was supposed to do. Or I can't tell these people no. Or if I set boundaries, people are going to be mad at me. All of these things can be connected to these earlier messages, therefore earlier scripts and internalizations from the folks who raised us. And it's those things that we have to detach from, because it's those things that also can lead to a lot of the mental health symptoms that we experience. And we think, it can show up at work, it can show up in relationships, it shows up with your children, shows up with the relationship with yourself. So I love that the client was like, well, wait a minute, I'm not them though. That's right. The moving out of survival mode, because we've been taught to just do things on autopilot and we don't have to anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. So you did touch already on, us needing to set boundaries. So what does that look like? How can someone set boundaries in their personal life and in their professional life so that these scripts and everything that's pulling us in the world can have less of an impact on our mental health?
Well, one thing that I like to do is start off with explaining the purpose of boundaries. Boundaries, and we throw this word out there all the time. We're like, nope, that's my boundary. Nope, that's my boundary. And we think that boundaries are for other people. Boundaries really are for us. Boundaries serve as a guideline and recognition of our own limits. So boundaries help us guide and direct our own behavior. It's not for other people to fall in line with what you need them to do. That's a byproduct of setting a boundary sometimes. But really, the boundary is dictating to yourself how you want to show up and how you want to act. So if we're going to set boundaries in relationships, we also have to know what our values are. What's important to me? What do I need in this moment? What makes me feel seen, heard, needed, all those things. So if the boundary in relationship sounds like, hey, just for sake of general definition, I don't talk on the phone after 9 p.m. That's for me, because that boundary helps me protect my energy. It helps mm-hmm. me protect my space. It helps me to get sleep. What we do think, though, is, oh, a boundary is going to tell them how to act with me. I don't do that. And they don't call me up to 9 because they just need to know how to move with me. No, the boundary is supposed to be so you get what you need, right? It's not going to respond to your boundary in a way that gives you what you want. That's why it has to be about you first. So setting boundaries in relationships sound like, hey, this is important to me. Sleep is important to me. I don't go out after 9 p.m. because safety is important to me. Or I don't talk about my friends with other people because friendships matter to me or relationships matter to me. So I'm going to call people every now and then or once a week to check on them. I'm going to say yes to things that help repair, restore my energy, right? Versus saying no. So these are things in relationships that you can set boundaries on. Professional wise, saying no to things that people are piling on your plate that you're not being compensated for. Checking in with your fear around, if I don't say yes to this, I'm going to lose my job. Because I know that's a huge fear for people that keeps people saying yes. Check the facts around that. Will you really lose your job? I can't say that that's a no for everybody, but sometimes that's a huge no. Well, people are going to be mad at me. Check the facts around that. And some of that stuff is internalized and doesn't fit the situation or the current reality. We may say something like, oh, that happened at my last job. Well, is it happening here? Can you say no here? You might have not been able to say no there, but can you say no here? So setting boundaries around your time, what you're going to do at work, what you're going to do at home, what goes to work with you, what stays at home. Setting boundaries around what type of relationships are you going to have with the people you work with? Are they going to be your friends or are they going to be your coworkers? Are you going to go out with them or are you going to keep it in the workplace? You get to decide what that looks like. You can set a boundary around your time. I get to work at this time because being on time is important to me. I make sure that I leave at this time because spending time at home is important to me. So there are so many different ways that you can set boundaries, but you also have to figure out what's important to you. Or if it's exacerbating some of the mental health symptoms that you do have, if you're stressed or depressed, will taking on this new assignment make me more depressed? Will going out with this person drain me and make me more depressed, or will it make me feel better? Will saying yes to this thing tonight make me feel stressed out? Do I need to watch TV tonight or do some cleaning? I need to watch TV because I'm already stressed. So these are things that you can negotiate within yourself once you understand what you're experiencing and what's important.
I love how you kind of put these steps to it, where it's like before you set the boundary, you have to identify what you value, right? Because now that I think about it, because I'm thinking as I go through this, otherwise it's more so like you're setting the boundary for the other person because you haven't even thought about yourself. Oh, Dr. Ebony, not you giving me a session. I love this. Okay. Now, another thing you actually mentioned in terms of boundaries, and you said something about saying yes when you were talking about personal boundaries, saying yes to things. And that was kind of like an epiphany for me because oftentimes when we think about boundaries, we think about all the things we're going to say no to, right? That's how we set a boundary. But you actually kind of flipped it and said the boundary is going to be, maybe it's like, I will say yes to 2 outings or something this month that usually I wouldn't have made the time for, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. People always associate boundary with no. And sometimes that boundary needs to be a yes. Absolutely.
Okay. This is good to know.
You know, but sometimes too many no's make us feel worse. And we need to say yes to ourselves. Sometimes we need to give ourselves permission to do some things.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. As my introverted self, I certainly agree. Yes. So can you talk to us? I know that we've been hearing a lot about self-care. One, self-care, and I think the other thing I've been hearing a lot, especially on TikTok, is soft life, right? I'm in my soft girl era, and I love it. So can you tell me about why it's important and how we can prioritize self-care, or maybe even dipping into that soft life if we're someone who has always been hard and had to be ready, how we can kind of shift into that?
And this is we're in our rebellious chapters, to be quite honest, as women, as Black women. We're saying we're living a soft life because we don't want to be strong Black women all the time. We don't want to have to show up in all the ways all the time. So I really do like that we're redefining how we show up and what this looks like. And we're giving ourselves permission for it to change with the seasons. I think historically, a lot of us just felt like we just had to be one way all the time. And I just got to keep it together and always be together. And winter season now, we're like, you know, there's going to be a time for me to keep it together and a time for me not to keep it together. And right now, I just want to be soft. And that means living a life of ease. What brings me ease? Am I doing too much right now? So ease could look like, is me ordering, like your client, ordering service for food. Is that ease for me? Yes. That feels like ease. Is outsourcing cleaning or laundry, is that ease? Yes. Some people like to say, you know, that's luxury. And for a lot of people, it is a privilege and a luxury to be able to outsource things. And sometimes if that's causing you financial strain and you're living beyond your means, a life of ease means saying, you know what? I can't afford that anymore. I got to pull back on the things that I was enjoying during the pandemic because I can't do that anymore. Right. I don't have those extra funds anymore. So that's what it is. It's me like assessing ease. What's going to help me feel at, is me going back and forth with this person on this in this comment section making me feel like I'm living a life of ease, or is this getting me irritated and more agitated? That's what it means. It means assessing all of these situations for ease. And is it going to bring you more joy? Some things are absolutely free. You don't have to have money to have a life of ease. Are you watching things on TV that's causing you to sleep disruptive at night or causing your sleep to be disrupted? Are you watching things on TV that's causing you to question your own relationship and have you make up things in your mind that aren't true, right? Mm-hmm. Are you comparing yourself to folks? These things are free, right? Yeah. So is your Instagram feed, TikTok, Facebook, is all of that stuff curated in such a way that it creates anxiety for you? So these are things that you can do that absolutely don't cost money. You don't always have to be out buying and doing the things. You can look at some things in your life and see what's happening for you. Are you scheduling transition time in between your appointments? I'm talking to myself right now.
And I'm thinking about myself.
Are you giving yourself space to actually breathe? Or are you scheduling yourself back to back because you aren't aware and being moment, like present moment focused? Like all of these things, right? And so then you ask about self-care. This kind of feeds into that. What do I need to feel well? And that's well in a number of areas. That's what self-care is. How do I prioritize myself in such a way that I am well? Mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, how can I just be well? Is drinking this water right now going to help me be well? And I'll give you a real example about just me. Drinking water is good, right? Great. And we need it. There are some times when I need to allow myself to have something else other than water because I haven't allowed myself to have balance. Is that, am I well in that way? I'm not well in that way, not because I'm drinking something that's quote unquote unhealthy, but because I don't have balance.
Right.
I don't have balance and I'm further perpetuating a fear that this is the only way I have to do things. That doesn't help me be well. Right. Is me spending 40 minutes on this bike when I know I'm going to be late for my appointment helping me be well? I know they say get the cardio in, but is that helping me be well given the context of today? Mm-hmm. And so all of these things are questions that we can ask ourselves, but we have to be a little bit willing to slow down and operate under that in that place of questioning ourselves rather than going by rules that exist just because they exist. And many of us don't know how to exist outside of rules because rules are all we've known and we don't know what our voice sounds like or we don't trust it. So that's why I spend so much time in therapy talking about what do you sound like? I had to just tell a client today, I'm gonna slow you down. I've heard you say what they need. I haven't heard you say one time what you need and how you're gonna give it to yourself or actually what you're gonna do to kind of evaluate what you need. That doesn't dawn on us many times.
Yeah.
And so just that flowing, that's what self-care is. What do I need? How do I stay well? What do I need to be well? And well looks different depending on the season.
Absolutely. And notice Dr. Ebony did not say, go get your nails done. Go soak in it. I was telling someone the other day, for me, right, going to get my nails done is a chore. I will push it and push it and push. I just went yesterday, but I will push it and push it and push it until the absolute last minute because I don't want my nails to break. And then I'll go and do it.
Because I need to go.
It's a chore. Now, for some people, it may be relaxing. But like you said, you have to identify what you need, what your needs are. And it makes so much sense. And that really resonates that self-care is what feels good and it's what you need. And that may just be sitting outside on your porch or something like that. Yeah. That's self-care.
That's it. That's self-care. And that's free. Sit outside. Mm-hmm. Sit on the floor. Instead of
sit on the ground in the grass.
Yes. Yes. And sometimes that is all we need. And we just don't. One, we don't know what that looks like for us a lot of times in our community because we've lived in areas where that maybe wasn't safe or we didn't have access to grass or, you know, whatever. And so I have to be cognizant of that. But if you do have access to it now, utilize it. Go outside, get some sunlight if you can. You know, do those things that you weren't allowed to do, or those things that you bought that house for, or you got that apartment for. You got the apartment for that balcony and you still haven't gone out there.
Right.
You got the apartment for the gym and you still haven't gone down there. Like, so do the things that remind yourself of what kind of sparked interest in the first place and what's going to help you be well and find some sort of joy throughout the day. We all need that in the times that we're living.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I started going to sit in my yard and sitting right in the grass in between meetings. I'm like, let me just decompress.
Yeah, yeah, we need it. It is so needed.
Yeah. You've talked a lot about your clients, or kind of referenced your clients as we've been talking. And I want to shift to talk about therapy. I know that there was a stigma for such a long time, especially in the Black community, about therapy. You know, what do you need to see a therapist for, or go pray about it? Those are the things that we tend to hear. So I want you to talk about the benefits of therapy. And I'd also be interested to know what shifts you've noticed over the past 3 years as we've gone through this pandemic.
What I love about therapy, I have a love-hate relationship with the field of mental health, and I always get on my soapbox because just historically, Black and brown folks have not been safe in this space. We've been criminalized a lot. So I'm happy to see where we are now, while also understanding that there are a lot of systemic issues that still keep people out of therapy. We say in the Black community, we just don't want to go to therapy. A large part of why we don't want to go to therapy is the mistrust that exists and that's been embedded within this industry around how Black folks are treated once they do go to therapy, and the level of severity of diagnosis we're given once we do go. So I just want to put that out there that we've come a long way, and we still have a long way to go for folks to feel like they can trust this space. Even with the Black psychologist sitting in front of them, I'm still a product of a very white-centered profession. And so trying to get people who look like me in still is hard, and we've come so far. I think the benefit of therapy that I love is you get to let somebody else sift through the stuff that you've been trying to sift through this whole time and that you just can't figure out. I love going to therapy, and I go every 2 weeks myself, honestly, so that my therapist can help me work through, and I'm sick of working through it myself. Like, give me some perspective. I also think that it helps you to hear the perspective of somebody who doesn't kind of occupy the same mountaintop that you do. One of the things I tell clients is the only reason I'm able to see what is going on for you is because I'm on a whole different mountaintop and I have a whole different perspective. It doesn't mean that I'm any better than you. It doesn't mean that I am smarter than you. It just means that my perspective is different because of where I am in your life and what I can see versus what you can't see. So our work together is to kind of figure out how I can help you figure out what's around you so you can move, almost like a guide. Like, no, that's the edge. Come back a little bit. That kind of thing. I also think therapy is helpful because it helps to make sense of things that you can't, because you're only making sense of things with your understanding. So helping somebody have some real science, some real data around what you're experiencing so that you can help put stuff in perspective and stop carrying it to the point where you think something's wrong with you, but that, hey, oh, these things happen to me because of this, or I'm experiencing this because of this, and here are some effective ways that I can get out of it based on data and science, right? I also think therapy is helpful because it gives you free space to just talk about yourself. We don't get enough space to just talk about ourselves, go on and on about the things that's bothering us, and it feels so good to be able to put words to things that live in our heads a lot. I love group therapy because it lets you know that everybody is struggling and nobody, and you're not the only one out here experiencing what you're experiencing. So you get to also have relationship with people who you're like, oh, I thought it was just me. It's like, no, that's very validating. It normalizes some things and it actually helps the healing process. We thrive in community. So why not heal in community? That's why group coaching is so effective. That's why group therapy is so effective. You get to share experiences with folks and heal in a way that you may not be able to do if it were just you. So those are some things that I think is super helpful about therapy. The thing that I think happened over the last 3 years is I think that we've normalized it. And I thank social media for that, to be quite honest. Social media has played a huge role in giving us permission to normalize or giving us permission to say we're going to therapy and normalizing us actually having a therapist. We like trends. For what it's worth, for better or for worse, going to therapy is a trend. And you can tell it's a trend by the number of people who have become mental health advocates, mental health professionals, mental health experts, the number of people who have created mental health tools or mental health conferences, the number of people who've been kind of weaving in mental health segments to their work. It's a trend and we're catching on. It's important, right? So I thank social media for that. And I think that over the past 3 years, folks recognized that we were struggling and we're struggling bad. And there's only so much we can take and there's only so much we can ignore. And we're getting to the point now where we can't ignore a lot of things anymore. And this stuff is hitting us right on our doorstep, quite literally. So people are recognizing that if we don't get help as a collective, things are not going to look good and we're not going to be well. And we're saying to ourselves, look, as we kind of phase out of our strong Black woman era, I can't handle everything. Let me get some help around how to handle this. And let me actually ask, and giving yourself permission to ask. So, and I think one last thing I'll say, there are more therapists who are coming out of training to actually work in this field. So we do have access now. I think there's a lot more access than we had before. And with the, you know, the pandemic and things like that, it made virtual therapy a thing. It was already a thing before, but insurance companies started to pay for it. They weren't paying for it before the pandemic. And that made it more accessible. So I think that should actually help too.
Okay. Wow. I didn't know that about virtual therapy. And I didn't know that the insurance companies weren't paying toward it. But you had mentioned group therapy, which I'm like, what? I hadn't really heard of that. I hadn't heard of therapy in a group setting. But you also talked about how important it is to have community. And then that kind of drew me back to, okay, so we got into this pandemic. Everyone had to be isolated. And even for me as an introverted person, it was very isolating, you know, because I'm used to at least getting out a little bit to do my little thing. And not being able to do that was, you know, you feel alone. You can't visit your family. You can't do things. So I think it's pushed us all into this space where we're craving community in that way. Even if that may not have necessarily been the way that we operated before. So can you tell us more about like how your group therapy works? I'm assuming this is something that maybe you offer and how that community helps to serve the people within it.
Mm-hmm. It's so shocking to hear you say you've never heard of group therapy. You know, we live in this field and we just think everything is just known to people. And we're like, oh, group therapy. Yeah, we should do that. It never dawned on me that group therapy is not something that's talked about a lot now until you just said it. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to go do some research about this. I'm going to have to talk to my therapist friends about this because now when you say that, it makes me remember a lot of the group therapy that I did was inside of medical systems, the VA, counseling centers. Those are very common, but when you're in individual practice, you really don't do group therapy as much. And so maybe you don't talk about it as much.
Right.
So that's going to have me thinking. The way that I do it now is I only offer it kind of like at certain points of the year. I actually haven't offered group therapy since before the pandemic, but I'm offering it again in August, which is going to be a processing group for Black women. Right. And so the way that it works is you set a topic. So it would be around empowerment and trauma recovery, of course, but it'll be something a little bit more tailored, like effective communication, setting boundaries. So the way that it works is that you come in, you kind of set the topic and you ask people to kind of talk about ways that they set boundaries throughout the week. What's been their difficulty? What's been their struggle? What have they, you know, what wins do they have? And let's talk about how some things may have gotten in the way and what mental blocks may have been there or triggers that may have come up or other things that may have come up, like having an argument or when you set a boundary, somebody left you. And so we're just processing and providing therapy intervention in a group space.
Okay.
So in a group, it's almost like I say group therapy is really like your conducting an orchestra. You talk and then you kind of be quiet. So some sessions are going to focus on somebody more. Some sessions mm-hmm. are going to focus on somebody less. And some sessions are going to rotate. But it's a shared space where people get as much out of it if they listen or if they talk. And you're the person there who's guiding the conversation so we don't go off on a tangent, but that we stay to a place where people feel like they left with something. So now, do they have a skill? Do they have homework? Is there something they can pay attention to? Also, it's accountability. There's a huge accountability factor being in community with other people. What are we learning about ourselves? One of the things that I tell people all the time is that you're going to learn about yourself in relationships no matter what. Relationships have a very unique way of showing you yourself, for better or for worse. And so if you're in a group with other women, those interpersonal things are going to start to come out. Some of those things are going to start to show. Some of those difficulties that you have around listening are going to start to show. And as a group leader, you say that. It's like, well, you know, I know Mary was talking and you didn't really give her space to talk. What do you think is coming up for you? Right. That kind of thing. Or I noticed that you wanted to work on setting boundaries. When Mary overspoke or when Mary jumped in when you were speaking, you didn't say anything to her. What did that feel like to you? What were you thinking when that happened? So that's kind of like how process groups sound, right? When you're just basically helping people identify some of the things in real time that they're struggling with.
Yeah. And it's calling out the action right as it's happening.
As it's happening.
So it's mm-hmm. like, it gives you an opportunity to kind of really think about why didn't I respond the way that I should have in that moment. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I love that. It's not an afterthought or something you think about later or homework that you do. You address it right then and there. Mm-hmm. I do have a better understanding now. The only thing that I could think of in terms of like group therapy, and I think a lot of people would think of this as like AA meetings or in a clinical setting, like what you mentioned, or in a hospital or something in terms of mental health. But to know that you as an individual could sign up for something like what you're doing in August with other Black women and be able to process through all these things we talked about today, I just commend you for giving us the space. You know, we need so much space to be able to get all these things out and to grow and evolve. Mm-hmm. And so I genuinely appreciate you for that.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. So in my coaching, I have done like little bits of group coaching here and there. I've done a few rounds of group coaching. Of course, you know, on my end, a lot of it is weight loss, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. weight loss more so from the front facing, the marketing, the advertising of it. Mm-hmm. And sadly, that's because in my industry, I have to fight against the gimmicks. Mm-hmm. And the gimmicks are all blaring out weight loss this, lose weight that. Mm-hmm. So if there isn't even one inkling of weight loss in what I'm advertising mm-hmm. or a program, it won't get anything. I won't get anyone. Mm-hmm. Right. So mm-hmm. sometimes I have to give them the shiny object so they'll come toward mm-hmm. it. And then we can mm-hmm. dig a little deeper and figure out what's going on. So I know for you from looking at your content and from, you know, kind of watching the things that you post, especially on Instagram, weight loss is something that you really kind of have this friction with. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. can you tell mm-hmm. us a little bit about that, especially as it pertains to Black women? Because I saw you specifically say Black women do not need to hear. And I was like, oh. So tell us about that, because I'm so intrigued.
Yeah. Friction is a good word. I do have a friction-filled relationship with weight loss. So it probably has a lot to do with my own personal development, more so than anything. So I was a person who lost weight. I lost like 50 pounds. I was always a bigger kid and bigger person, and my family kind of struggles with body stuff and weight stuff and just health in general. So when I lost weight, myself and my sister did, we went on this business venture called My Sister's Keeper, where we were weight loss coaches. So I used to be a weight loss coach.
Okay.
And so one of the things that happened when we created the business, well, we would do smoothie challenges. We would do coaching programs. We would do accountability calls, like all of these things that you typically do to help people stay on track with their goals, right? Well, the more I evolved in my own understanding of my issues, I realized that it wasn't that I wasn't disciplined. There were so many other factors playing into why I ate the way I ate or why I showed up with food the way that I showed up. A large part of it had to do with my relationship that I was developing with food and my body. Also, not recognizing that a lot of systemic issues like racism, capitalism, a lot of those things had to do with why my family approaches health the way that they do and why we have scarcity mindset around food. Because a lot of these things, being in a food desert, being told that your cultural foods aren't good, not having enough money to buy foods that actually were fresh, and so having to buy foods that were fast, you know, and so these kind of things, it just had me thinking, I was like, do I want to be teaching this all the time? And I felt a tug at my sort of like heart around, you really are telling folks that they're not good enough unless they're skinny. They're not good enough in their bodies unless they lose the weight that they have. And I really had to have a reckoning with myself and a come to Jesus moment, honestly, with myself. It's like, who are you to tell people that if they lose weight, then they would just be better or they would find more joy? What is that about? And it came down to, a lot of it had to do with my own fat phobia. A lot of it had to do with how I saw fatness. A lot of it had, and so many of us see fatness the same way because we live in a culture where we're told that fat is bad. We live in a culture that says skinny is good, fat is bad, and what you put in your mouth is tied to the moral, to your morals and your character. It actually depicts your worth and your value. If you are a fat person, you are less worthy. If you are a skinny person, you are more valuable, right? I said, I can't do this. This doesn't feel good to me. This feels very oppressive. And so I read a book by Sabrina Strings called Fearing the Black Body. And that was the last thing I needed to read for me to pivot. So she speaks about the racism and she speaks about the cultural sort of development and our societal development of fear around fatness. And fear around fatness actually just started as fear against Black folks. It was actually meant to set us aside from white folks. And so if you were fat, if you were Black, you were told you didn't have any self-control. You were told that you were gluttonous and all these things. So the more of that you were, the less white you were. So a lot of diet culture centers itself around aligning with whiteness. And so the more thin you are, AKA the more European body that you have, AKA the more white man or white woman body you have, the better we see you. And I just couldn't keep showing up with women who look like me, telling them that message. I just couldn't keep saying, well, why didn't you lose those 17 pounds you wanted to? You don't love yourself. When I tell you that irks me to no end, you don't love yourself enough. It's super oppressive. And is exactly the messaging that has gotten us to where we are as a Black and Brown community. It's not that we don't love ourselves enough. It's that there's no money. And so what do we do about that? There's no fresh food. What do we do about that? And so diet culture places the onus on the individual to correct. And you'll even have some people who, because of really deeply rooted internalized fat phobia, one of the main arguments I hear is, oh, but you don't think Black people have heart disease? I'm not saying that. Oh, you don't think Black people have obesity, or you're okay with Black people just dying from high blood pressure? I have said none of that. And actually, if you want to take a moment to slow down, you're repeating what diet culture has told you to repeat. Because a lot of these issues we wouldn't have if it were not for the money, if it were not for the poverty, if it were not for the food desert. So it's, yes, our problem now to correct, but also we can't correct it in isolation without understanding that a lot of these people you're just telling to go eat a salad don't have access to a salad, don't have access to healthy foods. It's almost like what you said, I've never heard of group therapy. Telling somebody to eat kale who never knew what the word kale was sounds just like that. Right. But these are the things that we internalize. These are the messages that we hear. And I vow just to not do that. So I want us to get to a place where we understand the relationship more rather than the what and the how. Why is it that I'm showing up like this? Why do I feel guilty? Why do I feel like a burger is bad? But if I eat this salad, I feel like I'm good. Mm-hmm. Why do you feel it? Because you've been told that you're worthy if you eat a salad, AKA what white people eat. And I'm saying we eat salads too, but typically when you see weight loss and salad is white center. But we feel good. We feel like we are good enough when we eat a salad and we're bad people when we eat pizza. Why is that? Mm-hmm. Why is that the determining factor for your character? And a relationship helps people to slow down and help people to really take a look at all the factors. It's almost like being in a real relationship with another person. What are the components of the situation that's adding to how I feel? What are the things that I want to accomplish here? What are the things that I want to pay attention to here? How do I want to show up here? How do I create a safe space? How do I create one that's trusting, or that makes me feel like I can trust and they can trust me? What's reciprocal? And so if we focus on weight loss, we can't ask those questions. We're typically just focused on how does the scale move? What do my pants say? Can I fit this shirt? And while those things are also important for some people, it doesn't allow us to focus on all the other mechanics that make this thing go. And so that's why I moved away from it. And I no longer wanted to tell people your body is bad. Because the last thing is, you can't look at a fat body and say that it's bad. People think you can, but you absolutely cannot. Mm-hmm. No more so than you can look at a small body and say that it's good.
Absolutely.
So being weight loss centered doesn't sit well with me with that regard, because it just continues to reinforce these same stigmas, miseducation, and I think oppression that exists within what I call diet culture. Yeah.
Listen, I have to, because first of all, thank you for saying that. I feel like I've been standing on my little tiny soapbox trying to get this message out there to get people to understand, because I want to go back. You talked about you losing 50 pounds, and I think, I don't know how long ago that was for you, but I think there is something that us, especially as Black women, and I want to include and say women of color in this moment, mm-hmm. because I prioritize working with women of color in general. And I've seen women from all different backgrounds, you know, from different parts of Asia, for example, who are like, you know, can I eat rice? Right? Like, that's a big staple in their community. And it's like, I don't even know if I can eat rice. And I'm like, who in the heck stigmatized rice to where we're thinking we can't, you know, we can't eat rice. We can't eat carbs. This is bad. That's bad. But I think it's important for us to, well, first I want to say that when I lost my weight, it's been 10 years. Because of what you're talking about, I chased and chased and chased the number on the scale. And I tell this story all the time. My arm was the same size from the shoulder to the wrist. Okay. I just looked like noodles, girl. It was it was real bad. Okay. I'm 5'4". I was like 125 pounds. Wow. Because growing up and just thinking about diet culture, that's what you hear. You hear that 120 pound kind of thing a lot. Mm-hmm. And especially back then, it's changed now, which I'm so happy about. But back then it was definitely the 120 pounds. And for me, I guess because of what I saw, it was the size 4. Being a size 4, like that was just the thing at that time. And I got so small, I was about a size 0. It was very bad. So I've already gone to that extreme and I've seen what that created. And I think that's how I got to this point. And then, of course, you go through, you know, you grow up too. You know, I got older and I started to look back and started to realize when I started thinking about, well, how did my mom play a role in this? Like, what did my mom think about food growing up? And just going down that rabbit hole got me to the place of, okay, we weren't even in a position to get the healthy food. She didn't even know what the healthy food was. She was focused on food, period. Like, we just needed to eat, you know? So I think that a lot of what's lost in this space is not having a space for women of color, for people of color, period, and especially for Black people, to be able to have that time to reflect on how they may have gotten to the point that they are now in terms of like what their history has been and what their lack of access has looked like. I think that a lot of us have now come into a point where we're in better places financially. You know, we're doing better overall and we're in a position to do better. But I'll have clients who are executives who are stopping at McDonald's on the way home from work, you know, because it's just this thing that's just embedded in this thing that they've always done. So I think it's going to take a lot of work, especially from people like you, Dr. Ebony, to get us to shift our mindset less so about the weight loss. I know that's not your thing, but more so about what do I deserve in terms of being healthy? And what types of foods do I deserve to eat, to be putting in my body? you know, mm-hmm. regularly. Of course, we can have the little treats here and there, but like mm-hmm. regularly, what do I deserve?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, and that's something that we do need to be focused on. I think the thing that gets me is when that becomes all of what we're focused on. And I'm not able to function in society and enjoy myself because that's the only thing I'm focusing on. I'm pretty sure you dealt with this too. I did. I was bodybuilding at a time where I got down to 5'6", smaller than 125 because that's stage weight, right? Mm-hmm. If you imagine what that looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
So it took over every facet of my day. Mm-hmm. Every facet of my day was concerned about when I worked out and what I put in my mouth. That is not healthy and that is not balanced. And if that's the total of who you are, then that's a very, very, very poor relationship with food and your body. You actually are less out of touch than you may realize. You're not based in reality. And so I would rather teach people about how to show up empowered with food, like how to make choices from what you and your body are telling you rather than rules, because I think that doesn't keep you grounded either. Right? Because if I want rice and my body is saying we need carbs, we're tired, we're sluggish, we need energy, and you're saying, oh, but I can't eat carbs because they're bad, you're out of touch with your body. You're mm-hmm. out of touch with your body. You're out of touch with your relationship with food. And the thing that weight, you know, focusing on weight loss from the standpoint of what diet culture does is it doesn't help you understand that your body is way more powerful than you may give it credit for. Your body will tell you when it's had enough if you take care of it in a way that you're listening to it. But many of us can't listen to it because we're still in survival mode a lot of times. And diet culture keeps us in survival mode, believe it or not. It's like, oh, you're bad. Oh my God, I can't believe. It keeps you in scarcity mindset. And I use this example all the time when I'm coaching around food relationship. If you went into a gas station and they told you, you know what? Those peanut M&Ms over there that's the last batch that they're ever going to make. You went in to get one, you're going to get more. You want to know why? Because that person, whoever told you, just activated scarcity. And the reason that we show up with food binging or not knowing when to stop is because we probably are engaging with scarcity. Oh, I'm going to eat better tomorrow. That day before is always going to be a miss. Mm-hmm. Rather than just what do I need in this moment? And so it's so much more to teach. You can lose weight as your body, do what you want with it. But it's so much more to teach than actually making the scale move.
Yep.
Because if you leave your body alone, leave all the other stuff alone, your body typically will do what it needs to do, whether that's lose weight or gain weight. It's going to do what it needs to do. But we just have to intervene so much because we are afraid and because we've been conditioned to be fat phobic that we get in our own way a lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been a word. It's been an entire word. And I know that the audience, I know you guys are appreciating this so much. Dr. Ebony, I want to thank you for coming on the show, for talking to us, for giving us so many gems. I don't know. This is probably going to be one of the first times because usually I do a podcast episode. I'm like, oh, I don't want to hear it. Like send it to the editor. Right. Because I don't want to hear myself back or whatever and critique it. But this is going to be one of those episodes where I go sit down and it's like now I can transition from host to listener. Yeah. And just take me some notes, you know, just take me some notes. So thank you so very much. Can you tell everyone where to find you? Tell everyone about what you have coming up. We know about the group coaching. Tell us more.
Yeah. So y'all can find me hanging out on Instagram, probably too much. Dr. Ebony Online. I'm Dr. Ebony Online on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And I'm Dr. Ebony on TikTok. If you want to check out my therapy cards, you can go to mytherapycards.shop and there's a deck for women, teens, and men. And there's also journals to go with those too. So what I have coming up is we have a new deck coming out this summer. So we're going to be releasing a couples edition. I'm super excited about that. And then it's like probably my favorite, because I love relationships, anything relationships I love. And then I have a coaching program for other therapists and coaches to learn how to create impact and to create products and services that move them beyond one-on-one coaching. So that's what I have coming up. And then, of course, the group coaching in August, the group therapy in August.
I love it. I'm so excited. I got to go get some of your cards. Do you ship internationally?
I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Shipping internationally. We've been blessed enough to do that since 2020. So we're excited.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Because I was looking around shopping for myself.
Yeah. Where are you? Are you not in the state?
No, I live in Mexico.
Oh, girl. Yes, we ship to Mexico.
Girl.
Good for you. Oh, I bet that's fun.
Yeah. It is. It is. So, hey, thank you guys so much for listening or watching this week's episode of Worth the Wait. Remember to catch Dr. Ebony on IG. Also check out those cards she has coming up. She also has the group coaching or group therapy coming up as well. And I will see you guys next week. Bye.